The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. If you've listened to this show before, you know my guest, Larry Allen. Larry had his own show here on Federal News Radio for a couple of years, at least a couple of years, Larry, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. When you were president of the coalition, you struck out on your own a few years ago, and now you do exactly what, Mr. Allen?
Now I am a professional problem solver, Mark. I work with companies that are looking for ways to solve problems associated with their federal business.
Okay. Any particular types of companies you work with in this solving situation?
Yeah, one of the nice things about having the coalition background, as you alluded to, is that I've worked with all kinds of companies. So whether they're IT, professional services, large, small, so long as they're in the commercial services and product space, there's a good chance I might be able to help.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things that one might think when you think of the coalition is that that would make Larry an expert in the schedules, which indeed it does, but it's not restricted to the schedules. There was a rumor about that you were one of the advisors on the soup contract. You advise a number of companies on multiple different vehicles, particularly the GWACs and the IDIQs. Is that correct?
It is. It is. I've worked a lot with soup. I worked with people on their GSA Oasis offerings, for example, and prior to that, on some Alliant work.
Okay. We're here today to talk not exclusively about, but about products. Larry and I are going to be hosting the new rules of selling products to the government on November 11th. If you want information on that, drop me a line, mark@federaldirect.net. We are going to be doing that most likely in in McLean in Northern Virginia. And there'll be limited seating. We're only going to take about 35, 40 people. So if you want to come, shoot me a note, mark@federaldirect.net, or shoot Larry a note, larry@allenfederal.com, or is it L. Allen?
L. Allen.
L-A-L-L-E-N at allenfederal.com. So shoot either of us a note. We'll send you some information on that. We can get you signed up. But let's talk about starting the FY with yet another non-boom continuing resolution. I think we talk about this every year, don't we?
We do talk about it every year, Mark, and it's always the kind of the same outcome. It just depends on the timing. This year, it looks very much as if Congress will pass the continuing resolution to keep the government open before it actually shuts down on September 30th.
Mm-hmm.
So no shutdown this year. The House, as we put this show together, has already passed the bill. The Senate expected to do the same thing in the next several days. There had been some rumors about various things that would tie it up, but that doesn't seem to be the case. Now, the current continuing resolution that the House passed would fund the government through December 11th, and it would fund it more or less at the current FY14 levels, although there is a much less than 0.1% across the board reduction, so that people who need to say something about controlling spending can say that.
Okay, so will there be any significant impact on spending come October 1?
Well, there will be, and that gets to the nature of a CR. Under a continuing resolution, federal agencies can only continue the things they were already doing. So if they had a project underway, or they had done committed to task orders under a multiple award or other IDIQ contract, those are the types of things that can continue on and most likely will. On the other hand, the CR does not allow for any new projects to be initiated. So new contract awards, things that would be for new starts, new types of computer systems, for example, new chairs for your conference room, those types of procurements would be on hold until the end of the calendar year, most likely, at least, waiting for a formal appropriation to pass.
Okay, so even commodity items could be impacted. So we're talking, you know, not necessarily things at the micro purchase level, but you know, if you're doing a conference room that has, you know, 40 plus seats and you're refurbishing and you're going to bid that out, you're throwing that on hold?
You might have to.
Okay.
Now, you know, the definition of new spending technically is exactly how you just described it, Mark, which is new spending on any new project that does not have any precursor. In other words, it's not phase two. This would be phase one, and you're not spending money to keep existing systems running. You're actually contemplating a new solution.
Okay, let's say you painted the meeting room in FY14.
Well, this is kind of where we're getting to. This, I mean, it sounds silly, but you're absolutely right. I think there's going to be a lot of confusion in federal agencies by the fact that we've had consecutive fiscal years starting with continuing resolutions. We have seen in practice a progressively more narrow definition of what constitutes new in terms of new projects. So where while some agencies may adhere to the technical definition, the Congress has kind of done this to itself by passing CRs at the beginning of every fiscal year for recent memory, so that some people are going to say, well, we're just going to continue to do business as usual.
Yeah, I think we've had one budget pass on time in the last 20 years.
Right.
Something like that. And you know, Lord, I can't even remember what year that was. So what about the midterms? Is there any possibility of the midterms impacting the contractor community?
Well, I think certainly just on the topic we were talking about in terms of the budget, the reason why December 11th was chosen is because it's after the midterms, and if the Senate changes hands and goes to the Republicans, there may be some feeling that Congress will just kick the can down the road to the next Congress in January, which means we would have that CR extended into the new year. Otherwise, they may decide that they're going to get their ducks in a row and get something done before Christmas. So we'll have to see. I think that in terms of other outcomes for contractors, we're going to stay with the type of lineup we've had in the House for the foreseeable future. So, you know, Congressman Issa, no great fan of contractors, likes his oversight. Certainly we've seen a lot of oversight of VA contracts this year.
Mm-hmm.
If the Senate goes over, however, you know, Senator McCaskill, who's been a very strident overseer on contracts, would go into the minority party. She would lose her subcommittee chairmanships, regardless of whether the institution changes party hands. Senator Levin, chairman of the Armed Services Committee, is retiring, and he certainly has been a very strong force for both civilian and DOD agency acquisition. So you lose a lot with somebody like a Senator Levin leaving. So you're always a little bit on pins and needles about who's going to come in and take their place, because their agenda could be something other than ensuring that the lights get kept on and the ship stays at sea.
Okay. so it's yet another crapshoot. We have the CR, then the midterms, and then Congress. In January, we see the new Congress. So we see the seat shuffle, and perhaps majority
change in party affiliation.
Yeah.
So when you would have Senator McCain then become the chairman of Armed Services, he's like Senator Levin, has had a lot to say about acquisition.
Yep.
Not all of it has been what industry would like to hear. On the Homeland Security Committee, you would end up with a new person there, likely somebody who is not necessarily the ranking member right now. Senator Coburn is retiring. So you'll end up with somebody very new running that, and you just don't know what that person's agenda would be.
Yeah. So all in all, yet another crapshoot, boys and girls. You're listening to, the odds ain't in our favor. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'll be back with Larry talking about FSSI and LPTA after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Larry Allen. You can find Larry at allenfederal.com, A-L-L-E-N, federal.com. And I suggest you do so. Larry is he's a personal advisor of mine. He helps me advise my clients on a variety of issues. I don't think a week goes by when I don't send him an email with a question. Just, 2 days ago, Larry?
Right.
Just glad you're there, because he knows a boatload of stuff that I don't want to know. I'm the marketing guy. I'm not the contracts guy. And speaking of the contracts guy, the continuing saga of the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative and LPTA. Let's start with FSSI. Before we started recording, we were chatting about somebody not being particularly happy because they were on OS2. They are not on OS3. We're still in a rather protracted protest period. So pick it up, please.
Well, certainly. Companies that lost the office supply FSSI 3 contract are facing some real challenges right now. And I think how they address those challenges depends substantially on their brand name recognition, their ability to put other programs into place, things of that nature. So, the most obvious example of that is a Staples. Staples did not win an OS3 FSSI award, and yet it would be difficult to imagine that every federal agency would suddenly stop purchasing from Staples because of that. So right now they are using this time to come up with alternate methods of reaching their federal customer. And I think, too, Mark, other office supply companies should be looking at the same. And this is not just true for office supplies. Any company that competes for a federal strategic sourcing contract and does not obtain one needs to think carefully about, are they going to stay in the federal market? And if they decide, yes, we are going to stay in the federal market, how are we going to have a workaround? Or more properly, what are our multiple workarounds going to be so that we can continue to do business? Certainly the FSSI program has buy-in from a number of federal agencies. There are federal agencies who won't look at you if you're not on the FSSI. On the other hand, the benefit of not being on the FSSI is you can see the prices that other people bid to get on it, and you can decide how you want to compete against that pricing scheme, maybe developing your own market basket, for example, and also promoting ease of use and how else federal agencies who want to do business with you can reach you. And if you are smart and can maybe put together a unique market basket of items that better matches a smaller single customer's needs, you might be successful at picking off some FSSI business.
Well, you know, the thing that surprised me about OS3, was the simple fact that there is no lock on that. One would, you know, I assumed going into that Staples would have been one of the winners. So this clearly demonstrates that there is no market share ownership. You're renting the space.
Right. And, you know, Staples, had, for much of the OS2 contract, had been the largest company on it.
Oh, yeah. That's why I thought they'd still be there.
Right. It's right. It's remarkable that, you know, that they are not. So, you know, if you're any company that is on an FSSI now that comes up for a recompete, certainly this is a lesson that nothing is guaranteed in contracting life. And you can find customers that you've had longstanding relationships with who suddenly won't talk to you simply because of that. You can't always anticipate and overcome these types of obstacles, Mark, but you can overcome some of them if you plan ahead of time for what your second and third options are going to be.
Okay, and the second and third options could be, well, let me ask a probably a more specific question here. What if you've had a long-standing relationship with an agency and you go back to them saying, no, I did not win FSSI, but how about if we set up a simplified acquisition program with you for these particular items? Would, do you think, agencies be open to that?
I think some agencies certainly would be open to it, Mark, particularly if you can put together a selection of items that better match that specific customer's need than the more generic market basket used in the FSSI. One of the inherent difficulties with the FSSI program is that the market basket, that is the specifically priced low-cost items, that market basket is set up based on multiple agency usage. So it's not going to be able to capture the specific high needs of every government agency because not every agency buys the same amount of things.
Right.
Every agency has a different mission. So if you can formulate something that's more specific with your federal customer based around their specific needs and show them, look, simplified acquisitions, this is how our offer compares favorably to the FSSI market basket. And by the way, there's no industrial funding fee embedded here.
Mm-hmm.
Then you might be successful.
Okay. So, you know, there's certainly pockets that occur to me, you know, if you do forestry management products, you have the Park Service and the Forest Service, for instance, as two fairly significant potential customers. If, you know, just happen to have a customer in that arena. So approaching, you can't offer the same simplified acquisition procedure for both agencies. You can offer it to each agency.
Right. And that's that, and it's a little more work on your part. And, of course, what you're really trying to do as a contractor is protect your existing business and do that first. You want to protect what you've got as much as you can, and only after that is secured should you be looking at similar programs in like agencies.
Okay. Anything else? How does LPTA play into here other than simply being one of the terms of new contracts coming down the pike?
Well, Mark, what I've been hearing from a lot of companies, much to my surprise, frankly, is that LPTA is still alive and well. We had seen particularly in the Department of Defense about a year ago, rhetoric coming out that said, look, we need to understand that LPTA is valuable, but it is not an end to itself. And they're in the Better Buying Power 2.0 initiative issued by DOD, they said as much. Not everything lends itself to a low-price, technically acceptable solution. And yet, contractors are saying that that message hasn't really gotten out into the field. That may be one reason why DOD is poised now to release Better Buying Power 3.0, which will, in part, continue the message on proper and improper situations for LPTA use. You know, we started to see, just in the last few months, some people who went the LPTA route and then had to stop their procurement because they weren't getting the solution they wanted. That happened in the Air Force. It's happened in at least one civilian agency that I can think of. So you're beginning to see what people like you and I have long expected, Mark, and that is that, you know, LPTA does not work when you are trying to get any type of a specialized or even halfway sophisticated solution. You're going to end up spending more because you tried to go cheap.
Well, we have discussed that, I would say, on probably a half a dozen occasions on the radio and countless times over the phone or via email. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Larry Allen. You can find him at allenfederal.com. When we come back, we're going to be discussing some other GSA projects, including hallways. Back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Larry Allen of Allen Federal. You can find him at allenfederal.com, allenfederal.com. Again, Larry and I will be on November 11th, our first joint production of the new rules of selling products to the government. And the product issue is really huge. You know, with FSSI, with LPTA, with a lot of the schedule vendors being literally left out in the cold or in the real not warm arena, that's a huge issue. So, but that's not the topic we're going to talk about right now. We're going to talk about hallways, which, you know, what are they and why the heck do they call them halls?
Well, I think that's a very good question, Mark. The Hallways program is an initiative of GSA's Federal Acquisition Service. It comes directly from the commissioner, Tom Sharp. And what it's intended to be is an online resource for federal buyers looking for a whole host of information to make their buying situation easier, whether they're buying IT, that would be one hallway, professional services, which would be another hallway, supplies, I think you get the drill. There would be, I think Tom Sharp looks at this as being, you know, in a circle, in the center is the Federal Acquisition Service, and the hallways would be the rays of sun coming off that circle. So each hallway would have in it things like best practices that other agencies have used to conduct procurement similar to the one that you, the federal customer, might be contemplating today. So you'd be able to look at the best practices that GSA or other agencies have devised. You would also be able to look at guidance from OMB if there was any particular guidance that would affect what you're buying, whether it's veteran business, whether it's OMB guidance on making sure you're doing business with contractors that are offering appropriate wages. The other part of a hallway would be the contract vehicles that are available to you as a federal customer. so you could choose the one that best fits your specific need.
Would those necessarily be exclusively GSA contracts?
They would not. And okay. So I kind of liken this part of the hallway to the Progressive Insurance Company, where, you know, they advertise that they put their competitors' rates up on their website. So too would GSA put its competing federal agencies' indefinite delivery, indefinite quantity contracts on its website, and customers would be able to choose whether the GSA contract, whether it was a schedule or a GWAC or somebody else's, like a NASA soup, for example, would fit their need better. So I think the hallways are intended to be like hallways in a university or high school, places where you can more easily access knowledge.
Okay, so, but more like spokes on a wheel than one hall leading to another hall, leading to another hall, leading to an exit.
Well, and whether or not there are any fire alarms or kick me signs, yeah. I don't know.
Okay. So, I mean, it sounds like kind of a good idea, but it also sounds like one of those things like, hasn't this been done before?
Well, the other, I mean, to a certain extent, you know, what GSA is really doing here with the Hallways project is aggregating information that may already exist in disparate places and bringing it together. So how much net new content they're creating, I think, is an open question, but they're certainly aggregating content that could be useful into one place. The trick, Mark, is the same trick with all of the other recent Federal Acquisition Service initiatives, which is it's predicated on the premise that if GSA builds it, then the customers will come. And certainly GSA hopes the customers will come, but you kind of aren't really sure if they are. You know, GSA has a mixed reputation inside the federal government on being a good provider of information and a good provider of products and contracts. So agencies may have some bias against going to a GSA-hosted site. Similarly, if you're a federal buyer who's looking for, let's say, an IT solution, and you go on the main GSA.gov webpage, 75% of what you see is going to be about federal buildings and real estate.
Yeah.
You know, real estate and federal buildings are a very important part of what GSA does.
Huge.
So let's not confuse that. However, if I'm an IT buyer, I'm going to wonder whether or not this agency looks at me as a second-class customer. And if so, how much am I going to want to go into the hallway and see what they've got?
Well, you know, and I don't know. I'm assuming you've spoken at NCMA events before. Michael Fischetti just hosted the annual NCMA event conference just a month or two back, and if I remember correctly, there were several best practices lessons presented there. So. You know, who's going to be in GSA, who's going to be selecting what is and what is not a best practice? That could also, from my perspective, be an issue.
Well, certainly, and you're exactly right. I mean, what some would consider to be a best practice where we got a holistic solution that met our needs might not be ultimately considered to be a best practice if it didn't result in the lowest possible price.
Right. So, and lowest price, possible price does not mean totally technically acceptable.
Right.
So there are issues here. So, you know, I'm not displeased that they're doing this, but I'm very curious to see how it plays out.
Right. It's not a bad initiative, but as you say, it will depend largely upon whether it's a tool that buyers elect to make use of.
Yeah. And again, you know, hallways is not descriptive enough, frankly, from my perspective, to even indicate what's going on here.
Well, maybe this just reflects my age, Mark, but when somebody mentions hallways to me, I always think Molly Ringwald and 16 Candles.
Okay. Wasn't she also in the Breakfast Club?
She was.
So, yeah, there you go. Two old Molly Ringwald fans. So that's sick. I want to migrate on here. We've got a couple of minutes left in this, and I want to start on this. I want to go back to what product vendors can do moving forward. You know, we only have four or so of the FSSI BPAs actually in place, maybe five, I forget. But they're rolling out to a number of other things. What is your advice on what a company should do to prepare?
Well, I think the number one thing companies need to do if there's an FSSI coming or an FSSI recompete coming to your area is to get as much information, hopefully from the government, as you can. So, for example, GSA's furniture organization has been looking at doing a furniture-based FSSI contract. To the credit of the people who are running this project in GSA, they both gave and sought information from industry, as well as from customers. So you can't get enough information about what's going on, and you can't make smart business decisions about how your company is going to address this until you have some idea of the scope of the thing. And of course, using this furniture example, the furniture initiative started out much like the office supplies, much like the janitorial and sanitorial supply, FSSI, where it was going to be, you know, low price, a standardized set of items, in this case maybe a standardized workstation. And industry was rightly very, very concerned, and some of the major players were concerned to the point of deciding, well, this isn't a space that they wanted to occupy because it's not worth their while. It's not how they do business. But you know,
was that largely a margin issue?
Largely a margin issue, yes. And also, you know, some of these companies put a lot of meaning into their brand names, and they don't want to cheapen the brand name for a segment of the market where they know they're not going to be the lowest price against some ready-to-assemble item, and then lose out on their image for buyers who are looking for them for something that's not competing in that price range.
Right. Okay, so, hold that thought. We're going to come back to it right after the break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest is Larry Allen. We're talking about, right now, the furniture, FSSI, pending FSSI.
Well, and what I was saying as we are going into the break, Mark, is that the furniture FSSI is turning out to be, I think, a good example of why companies need to gather information. As I was mentioning, the initial idea was to do this FSSI in the same way that the others have been done. But ultimately, and if you had assumed that as a contractor, you would have initially been correct. But ultimately, GSA did decide to change around how it was going to come at the furniture FSSI solution so that it's going to look very different from the other product-based FSSI agreements, so that in this case, it's not going to be some of the Armageddon that industry had initially been concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
If you had stopped in the process, though, of gathering information, you might not know that, and then you would be behind the ball for something that may or may not be an initiative that you want to participate in. So, you know, step one is to get the information. Step two is to go out and make sure that you are visiting your customers regularly. You and I probably remember the old TV commercial where the sales director comes around and hands out airline tickets to all of his sales reps saying, you know, we're back in the air, go visit people. Well, this is the type of thing you should be doing. If you think an FSSI is coming your way, you don't want to take any of your current customer relationships for granted. And you know, making sure that you're serving them well and working with them on tailoring specialized solutions for their needs could be a very good investment of your time and money.
Yeah, let's back up here a second. So let's talk about some specific. We're not going to name brands, but specific furniture. Some furniture is designed to last much longer, designed to be more ergonomically favorable, you know, for your body. And if you have like the lumbar support and all of that stuff, and a chair that breathes, you're going to be more productive. You're more comfortable. There's a lot of reasons, legitimate reasons, to spend more money on a specific chair. I advised a company that provides outdoor furniture that is made of recycled plastics, and this stuff looks really good. Doesn't sound like it, but it turns out really great looking. But it also lasts. It is, you know, eco-friendly, and it lasts about five times as long as other types of furniture. It does cost about 60% more than normal. But if you extrapolate over time, you know, there's major reasons to spend more on some things.
That's exactly right. I mean, life cycle costing is a way to make a best value determination. Here, I mean, people that buy the things that last longer and have the stronger warranty ultimately will be making a higher investment and up front, but they'll be making that investment much less frequently than they would if they had gone a different route, merely getting the thing that costs the lowest amount of money today. We see, Mark, a number of federal agencies making that decision, whether it's FSSI-based or not. The whole concept of this is the lower sticker price today is really very dominant in large parts of the segment. Whether or not it's actually the lowest cost over time or the best price, best deal over time, a number of federal agencies don't look at those factors unless they're talking about some sophisticated solutions or professional services that they might be buying. So there's really a tremendous need to educate customers on why something other than the lowest price item is in their best interest.
But are these factors that go into the award of the FSSI?
Oh, certainly they are.
Okay.
I mean, if you're looking at an FSSI solution, you're going to be looking at things that are very generic, things that are very truly commodity-like in a narrow definition of the word.
Mm-hmm. Legal pad.
Well, right, and you can also liken it to any number of examples in the commercial market. I mean, one would most obvious would be car advertising, where you know, the price you see for the car advertised in the paper on Saturday applies to that one car, and it does not have all of the things on it that the car you want will have on it, and so therefore, you know, that low price gets you a basic car if you're the lucky one person to get it. But, you know, what you end up getting is something that you want, and it's going to actually have some different features to it.
Okay. So what are there other things that vendors need to be worried about coming with FSSI coming to a schedule near you?
Well, certainly where GSA is looking, in addition to furniture, they're looking at tools. They are certainly still looking to some degree at professional services. Most likely that would be not any type of sophisticated service, obviously.
What about stuff on 84?
Well, in fact, what I was going to say is what seems to have overtaken FSSI and for most professional services, Mark, has been a consolidation initiative. Tiffany Hickson, who's the regional commissioner for GSA out in Auburn, Washington, is leading this up for the agency. Very smart, talented, capable leader. And what she's looking at doing is taking that some of the services on 84, some of the services on MOBIS, some of the services on the Log World contract, and rolling them into a professional services contract vehicle that would look more like OASIS in terms of its scope, although it would still be a commercial services contract under that part of the acquisition rules, but be making it more easily accessible for federal customers.
Yeah, and frankly, 84 is kind of a confused schedule. You got the law enforcement tools, law enforcement services, the emergency management tools, the emergency management services. The list kind of goes on and on.
Well, right, and it's kind of how do you standardize or do you standardize around a low-cost, technically acceptable bomb-sniffing dog? which I think are also available.
There are canine services available on one of them. It would probably be 84.
I'm not sure that as a federal taxpayer, I would be comfortable with the low-priced, technically acceptable dog. I would want the one that's most effective at ferreting out the explosives.
Yeah, it goes back to that Steve Buscemi line in Armageddon. You know, they're flying to the moon, this thing. Buscemi looks over at Bruce Willis and says, you realize, of course, this machine has 264,000 moving parts. It was built by the lowest price contractor. yeah, that's what I want to hear. Final thoughts, Larry.
Well, I think that the start of FY15, Mark, despite the fact that it's going to be under CR, is going to be a better start than FY14, for the simple reason is there doesn't appear that there's any shutdown in sight. Similarly, we seem to be hearing less about sequestration. Ultimately, that's still somewhat of a question mark, but you know, I'm happy that we're hearing a lot less about it now. So the government will be open for business on October 1st. Business will continue to be getting done. People who are speculating that all of the international disruptions we're currently looking at will add to federal spending, my answer to them is not yet. We haven't seen any evidence that that will happen yet, and I don't know that we will see any evidence that that could happen until well into the 2015 calendar year. So this is our, you know your parameters, you know your market, you know your federal customer is going to have a set pot of money. Your trick is to make sure that you have the channels and relationships that you need to go out and get it.
Okay. Larry, thanks again. And a reminder, everybody, November 11th, Larry and I will be doing the new rules of selling products to the government. And if you haven't figured out, this is not my day job. The federal government has 1.4 million people, DOD, uniform, and civilian, on LinkedIn. There's 320 million members on LinkedIn, one-third in the U.S. Your LinkedIn profile is the cornerstone of your advertising to the entire country. So let me ask you a simple question. What's on your profile? If you don't like the answer, drop me a line, mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.